Many women are afraid to do it. They're slightly ashamed. They're not quite sure about it. This is not so true of the younger women, like Pam here and her group. But older women, these things still hold very strongly, and I'm running into it in some of my teaching classes, and I find it very pathetic. And now in breast cancer, you see, it goes right through with the breast being removed and the immense fear of being mutilated and so on. And this is all part of this pattern of women's self-deprecation. A man would probably lose a piece of himself and not worry too much. But a woman is an immense fear. She loses anything, and she has been mutilated, and she's no longer attractive to society.
And that, of course, is her entire worth. Dr. Strachey,
I think Denise has put a finger on a very important factor, and I can't help but agree with her completely. And you might be interested to know that we attempt to teach breast self-examination on a one-to-one basis, not just giving a pamphlet, but actually show a woman with her own hand how to examine her breast. We are very successful with the young women. We're very successful with women under the age of 40, under the age of 35. The teenager responds very easily. But the woman past the age of 50 has a great deal of resistance. Whatever the reason may be, it's very difficult to teach a woman past the age of 50 to do breast self-examination. We feel strongly that the time to do it is when they're young, in high school, in junior college. They respond readily, they carry it along, and we hope that they will bring the principles home to their mothers. They respond, and we also know that it's a remarkable thing how successful this can be, because when you teach it to young women, they will come across with new little lumps that are of no consequence, but they will point out lumps as big as the head of a pin, which is a new thing for them that they have discovered. And it means to us that breast self-examination, that a woman herself has learned to do and been taught to do and encouraged to do it, that woman really has the salvation of her breast in her own hands. She can find cancers at a stage earlier than that of an expert. She becomes the real expert with her own breast. And I think anything that women can do to stimulate each other in this direction is a proper thing and a good thing to do.
Let me add that very often in the courses that we run for older women and younger women, that self-examination in the breast is very often done in the context of a total information and discussion about our bodies in general, so that it's not directly moving in on the breast per se, but it's an exploration. And up to this point, medicine has really been in the hands of doctors. And I should say in the last 50 years, 80 years, 100 years before then, women were in charge of their medicine. Women are taking that information back and beginning now to teach each other and to do it in the context of our bodies, not only from a fear, you know, I'm going to die approach, but a pleasurable informational, it's an opening up. It's stopping from saying, I'm going to be passive, I'm going to be the little girl or the daughter with my doctor or with my husband or anyone. It's beginning to say, I am an alive, healthy human being, and I have a right to ask questions. I have a right to make choices about what kind of treatment I'm going to have if I need to, and that I am fully involved in this medical process. This is not the doctor, this is not the hospital, this is me. And it's very important for us to understand that as women, because then it's not just a fearful thing. It's not just my breast that's being challenged. It's my life. And it's seen in an overall picture. It's not just an isolated thing.
I may have a word of caution that I must interject, and that is that breast self-examination is in a special category. When you teach a youngster to examine her breast, her breast is okay at that time. We don't have cancers in young women. But when you give a pamphlet to an older woman, let us say a woman who is less young, let us say at the age of 40 and so on, she tries to examine her breast, she runs into snags that prevent her from continuing. One of them is that every breast is made up of lumps of all sorts, sizes, many, many of them. Examining of feeling her breasts for the first time is a very frightening experience for most women. On top of which, we don't know whether that particular woman who's gotten that pamphlet has something wrong with her breast. And she may not know it either. the time to teach a woman breast self-examination, and it must be done on a one-to-one basis, if possible, is after she's been examined by a physician or with whatever examinations he can do to make sure that she's okay. So he says, now you're all right with all your lumps and bumps that you've got now. Those belong to you. This is okay. From now on, you keep looking for something different. But if you give them a pamphlet and you distribute pamphlets, you run into the possibility that you're going to give those pamphlets to some women who have something wrong with them.
Just as an additional thing, what about the possibility of the woman and the doctor having the kind of relationship, or a nurse, where she could examine her breasts and ask the doctor or the nurse about those different lumps and so forth, so that the doctor or the nurse is open to those kinds of questions and can answer that instead of just passing out a pamphlet?
This is what I agree with. Now, you put your finger on it. That's the right way to do it.
I think that as a representative of an organization which emphasizes the difference in people and the individuality of people, I want to reinforce what's being said here by you, especially Dr. Strax. Some of us distinguish between amateur analysis and professional analysis, and we would want to be sure that whatever we think we're diagnosing, be it positive or negative, there's an expert or at least a professional diagnosis involved. So that I would like to just insert the difference in women. Mm-hmm. There may be some women that are embarrassed, that are frightened, and so on. But I wonder if some of this problem of detection mm-hmm. and breast self-examination, which we're talking about and which is being talked about, I might even add, ad nauseum these days, is not a total health question. Shouldn't we, isn't it generally understood that it's a good idea to detect a bad tooth early, or a pain in your foot early, or a possible broken bone early, and so on? In other words, detection is an awareness of your body, or an awareness of what's going on, but it's a very highly individual matter. And what I'm really driving at now mm-hmm. is, can we remove some of the stigma of cancer from the problem and bring in it into it the, because of what I said much earlier, cancer carries a stigma with it that is unfair to the people that have it. And 2/3 of the families in this world that we live in here are touched by it, mm-hmm. most of them rather severely. Mm-hmm. And since we deal with, I have to say it, that 2/3 of the population who still are not being cured of cancer, and to whom very little attention is given, either with the medical dollar or the government dollar. I'm concerned about those people that are on the air right now, hearing about it. Mm-hmm. There is a stigma.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't be there. It's just another disease that deserves all of the early detection and analysis that can be given to it by the medical profession, and then by everybody else that deals with it. When you get into comprehensive care, you have a whole spectrum of people in addition to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And he is central very often in our health profession and in our health care and our health delivery system, which has to be looked at. I'd like to say that Cancer Care Incorporated and the National Cancer Foundation have gone on record in support of the principle of good national health insurance. We haven't seen a bill yet that we thought was adequate, but in principle, we are certainly in favor of it, and we want to see a good national health insurance bill passed as soon as possible because of the catastrophic costs involved with the illness that are both emotional and financial. Now, I have diverted a little bit here from the detection. I didn't mean to. I just wanted to bring it down to two things. That it is possibly an individual matter and not a global issue. And secondly, that it's a health matter in addition to being or beneath being or a cancer matter. I would hope for some support on that.
It seems to me that Dr. Strax's situation with the Guttman Institute being the first, and there being 27 other centers for this question of diagnostic clinics. As far as I can understand, they're going to, apart from the support for the American Cancer Society and the NCI, which I believe is in with it, they're going to run out of money, and what then? I mean, they have these beautiful schemes of setting up these demonstration centers, and the magic word in this, or the key word in this, is demonstration. In other words, you get funding for something, and you start it up, and you have 2-3 years of funding for a certain project, and it's called demonstration. In other words, you're going to demonstrate that it's possible to do this, and this is just great. Then it's, in other words, is seed money. These are two magic words in the research foundation money field, is seed money and demonstration projects. And Dr. Strax is right into this, I'm quite sure, very deeply. And where is the money going to come when these funds run out? Does he have to put in another grant application and hope he gets it? I mean, these are all, to me, just putting fingers in the dike, band-aids, or whatever platitude you want to use. There has to be a national health service which is paid out of taxation, as it is in other countries such as Britain. And we are paying while we're healthy, the way the Chinese believe. When we're sick, we get medical care. And it is not for free. We're paying for it as much as we pay for Social Security. I do not see any other system going to work in this country at all. And then all these problems of Dr. Strax and so on, and these centers that will run out of funds, that will have to be established on a nationwide basis. Then we can start looking at things like prevention. But so long as we're dependent on scouting around and scurrying around like a bunch of mice, exchanging notes on what's a good foundation and rushing down to the foundation offices there, the
library.
You know, the library there, and hunting up and finding out which little group will fund what project and can you squeeze in under the wire into that project. It's the craziest system of medical care I've ever seen in the world.
The whole
idea
of the
demonstration. Well, I have a
solution
for you. Yeah. I have a solution. If your insurers would pay the physician for your preventive benefits, such as a mammogram, such as a pap smear, you would see a proliferation by private industry of centers which would do just that. But it's the reluctance, for political and economic reasons, of the large insurance companies to participate actively in a prevention campaign that has stymied all efforts.
Health is everyone's right. This is what is now becoming very clear. The patient's bill of rights and everything else is making it clear that every single American has the right to good health care. This is where I agree so thoroughly with Mary here. What has to be done is it has to be a nationwide, across-the-slate thing by taxation, and not through insurance companies, and it is not something that is going to be organized through private industry. Private industry has ripped us off enough, the pharmaceutical companies and the rest of them, in terms of costs of drugs and so on. This has to get out of it. It has to get into the national area. Many other countries are doing this, where people assume that good health care is part of what you're entitled to as a citizen of that country. And America, of all countries, should have been a leader in this field.
Yes. Well, I would ask you, in countries where there is socialized medicine, where say a mammography is offered to the woman across the board free, what percentage of the women take advantage of that benefit?
What number of women take advantage of it here? I mean, Dr. Strax is giving it for free. He's loaded with women. I mean, women taking advantage of it, he can't handle it.
But that's not responsive to the question.
It's an area.
No, it isn't, because we are in a crisis situation here now.
What crisis?
Two of the leading ladies of this country, two of the leading persons of this country, have been affected by breast cancer.
And they were, one of them was at
breast
our
cancer now.
As you know,
breast cancer now is a tremendous, tremendous fear among women. It's a fear which has been, in other times, psychologically repressed. Now I ask you, in England, in Germany, in Sweden, what percentage of the women take advantage of these free mammographies?
I have no idea what the situation of mammography is in those countries, as I haven't been in any of them in many, many years. Dr. Strax is far more competent.
Well,
I
can give you a little bit of an idea. In England, they are trying to set up breast cancer screening, and they run into the problem of how much does it cost. With the health insurance plan resists spending large sums of money if they can avoid it. So you have that problem. But in spite of it, there are screening attempts being made in England. If they work out well, it may very well become a truly widespread affair. There are other countries. In Germany, they do have take screening of various sorts and attempt and including the breast. There are other countries where there is health insurance that do the very thing that you're talking about. And I think you're perfectly right. If we have a health insurance scheme here which will pay for preventive medical care and bypass the third-party insurers or whatnot who are resisting this sort of thing, I'm sure we will have a good deal more preventive care. But we can talk about the ideal arrangements. In the meantime, what do you do now? What has happened is, as a result of these programs of mass screening, others are going into the act. A program is being started in Westchester by the Westchester Cancer Society, of all things. There are many private groups that see a way of making a buck in this thing, I presume, or perhaps they're only interested in women, we must say. But there are attempts being made to set this up on a private basis. There are other attempts being made to set it up on a semi-private, for instance, Strang Clinic, and organizations like that is beginning to do thorough breast examination at a minimum low fee. So this is a step in the right direction. We don't know, but what we will have to have all types of systems. The state is being pushed to set up 10 centers in this state. Massachusetts is being pushed to set up screening, breast cancer screening centers in Massachusetts. And this is the way in which this will develop until such time as we have the ideal arrangement, which is what we've mentioned, talked about, what Denise mentioned, about having truly widespread screening.
Wait, Pam had a question.
One of the things that has become apparent to us, about 2 years ago, we did a survey of a number of the different clinics, family planning clinics and so forth throughout the city, and we found that about 90% of those clinics did not do thorough breast examinations as part of their routine care. Secondly, that an internist very often, if a woman goes for a thorough examination, a woman very often will not be able to get a pap smear as a part of that examination. Thirdly, one of the women in our group works in a major medical center here in the follow-up of cancer patients, and she is noting that in the histories of cancer patients, that they have been recently to a doctor or even in hospital on some other complaint and have not been given full examination, including pap smear and breast exam. Now, it seems to me that one possibility, for instance, in beginning to deal with this is either a re-education or a retraining or some kind of a consolidation of these services that are being offered where internists and doctors and nurses, for instance, and paraprofessionals can be trained to provide these services. It doesn't have to, a woman shouldn't have to go to a specific clinic, one in the city, to receive this treatment or this examination. So it does seem to me that there's a lot of fragmentation and wasted energy in that process.
There is a problem in here, and I think Dr. Strax knows a great deal more about this one, and that is the fact that to read a mammogram is a very highly specialized thing. I mean, the two top experts that I've heard about in this city, they get an 80%, between 70 and 80% accuracy rate. And the accuracy rate on mammograms is not necessarily that high. What you're dealing with is an X-ray picture, which is you're identifying and making distinctions between 20 to 25 shades of gray. And in that mass of grayness, you are identifying whether there is a tumor or not, or whatever it is. Now, this takes a great deal of training, and there's a great shortage of trained radiotherapists and radiologists, diagnostic radiologists in this country at this time. This is an overall national problem. Now, Dr. Strax is overwhelmed with people coming because of all the publicity with these two women who had their breasts off recently. And I'm sure he can confirm this fact. There are not enough skilled people to read the mammograms at the present time. And this is one of the problems underlying developing more centers for mammography.
Can I just ask a point of information? The public might be interested. When is a mammography indicated? When do you advise a woman to come in?
At the present time, we advise women to have what we call a thorough breast examination that includes a mammogram once a year over the age, when they've passed the age of 35. And to continue it for as long as they live till the age of 92.
We're gonna make a short pause here for a station break. This is WBAI FM, listener-sponsored radio in New York, 99.5. Have I left anything out? Good. Okay. I would like to take a short break right here at this moment, so we can set up to take some phone calls. Our number here at WBAI is 371-5200. And let's take a little break and relax a bit and take some phone calls. And here we are again. This is Viv Sutherland, and we're discussing women and cancer with Dr. Philip Strax of the Guttman Institute, Richard Klarberg of the Public Health Center, American Health Foundation, Mary Overton of Cancer Care, Denise Dillon Fuge of now New York's Women in Health Committee, and Pam Booth from HealthRight. And Pam had a question which she wanted to get in before we got to phone calls and before we got to the questions that are piling up here at the station. Pam?
Yes, Dr. Strax, you were just saying that you recommended that a woman have a mammogram every year once a year, every year after 35. Can you explain the reason for that? And can you talk a little about what some of us fear, the problems of radiation?
Well, we have to weigh one against the other. In the United States, the risk for a woman getting a breast cancer increases with her age. And a woman at 70 has 10 times the risk of a woman at 40. So that this is a problem that increases in its importance the older a woman gets. It's very little problem under the age of 35. There's very little breast cancer, so we say it's not necessary to go through any complicated examinations. But somewhere after 35 or after 40, it becomes an important problem because it remains, as I said before, the most common cause of death in women aged 40 to 45 of all diseases. It's an important thing. Doesn't mean that many women get breast cancer. Of course, it means that because that most women don't die at that age, and very few do, but they can get breast cancer. Now, it so happens that we need the clinical examination to feel the breast. That's a very important step because cancer shows up preponderantly as a lump, which a woman can detect for herself or a physician's hand can detect. The more expertise there is in the woman's hand, the greater chance that she'll find it in an early curable stage. The more expertise there is in the physician's hand, the greater chance that he'll find it in a curable stage. But no matter how we do this, in all studies, there are some 10 to 15% of early cancers of the breast that cannot be felt, either because of the size of the breast or because the cancer does not show up as a lump. Those cancers are detected on the X-ray. That's the reason for having the mammography. And it so happens that the cancers that are found on the X-ray alone and are not felt are the curable type. Those are the ones that we do best with, and a woman does best, so that it becomes an important thing. And then you have the additional problem. You're X-raying a breast. Are you going to cause any harm with your X-rays? And many women are rightfully interested in this problem. We know that the breast is a sensitive organ to X-rays. We know that when they dropped the bomb on Hiroshima, women who were in the radiation zone developed more breast cancer than those who were not. We know from other studies that when you give substantial amounts of X-rays to the breast, there is an increase in the amount of breast cancer over what you would expect if they did not get the radiation. So we know this, so we say to ourselves now, we are dealing with an extremely valuable procedure here which can detect cancer of the breast at a curable stage. At the same time, is there any risk that we run by radiating women? Since to find these early cancers, we have to X-ray them continuously or at regular intervals every year or every 2 years or whatever it is determined, and we have to X-ray them at regular intervals to see these early cancers develop, are you running a risk by giving them radiation? And we have to pay very close attention to this. And the way the radiologist, the expert in the mammography business, has solved this is that he has developed, with the aid of manufacturers and so on, equipment which with special films and so on produces these mammograms with very small radiation doses, much smaller than we used to use. And the doses are now so small that we feel that they're perfectly safe even if you do radiate a woman every year for 30 years. It is said, for instance, that if 90 rads is given to a breast over a period of time, this is based on Hiroshima data, if 90 rads is given to a woman's breast over a period of time, you will double her chance of getting a breast cancer. Now, so we use that as a kind of a magic figure. We don't quite know whether this is even true. But we say, don't get to the 90 rad dose without whatever you do in radiating a breast. Well, now we are working on with doses of 1 rad or 1.5 rads every time we X-ray a breast. So you see that we're well below the possible sum total of 90 rads. We used to do it with 15 rads, and some men still do use 15 rads when they examine the breast, and this is not right. So we say, let's get to the more efficient ways of doing it. Let's work with small radiation doses so there's no risk of causing harm, and all we have is the possible gain from finding cancers that are curable. X-ray of the breast is a most vital, important procedure. We must not hurt it by any talk of any risks when there is no risk, when you're dealing with the expert who knows, who has the special equipment and knows how to X-ray a breast.
Denise had something to add to that.
Dr. Strex, I just wondered, I've been getting very interested in a new technique for finding tumor, which is ultrasonography, which is a system of echo, bouncing echoes. Now, is anything being done in this area to develop a method for diagnosing breast tumors? Because this does not involve any question of radiation. There's no radiation involved in it. And I'm wondering, is there anything coming up in the medical field in this area?
We're looking into this ultrasonography, and in New York City, there is one project that's being funded by the National Cancer Institute, Albert Einstein, to develop a machine which will do this job in a more efficient way. Up to now, the ultrasound has not been efficient enough to detect a breast cancer that you could not find in other ways, or that could find a cancer in the early curable stage. We did not get to that point yet. If that machine at Albert Einstein pans out and works out into worth something worthwhile, it will add to our ways of detecting early breast cancer. There is some machine in Australia that may come to this country that will do the same sort of thing. At the moment, we do not have ultrasound that's efficient enough to add to our way of pickup of breast cancer. The only things we have that are at all efficient that we know about definitely is the clinical examination of a breast, the X-ray, and thermography, which gives us a hint, a strong hint in that direction.